Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hello and welcome to another Curzon Film Podcast. I'm Jake Cunningham, and this week we're going to be talking about Agnes Varda and JR's new film. For me, the place is our recording studio, and the faces are Alistair Bayman and Rowan Woods. Lovely to have you here with me, guys.
Good to be here, thank you.
Hi, nice to be back.
So Rowan, you're a guest on our Gleaning Truths special, which was all about the films of Agnes Varda, which we recorded ahead of the release of Faces Places. And so fantastic to welcome you back. If listeners want to get the prequel to this episode, just head back and hear Rowan's thoughts. But we can go now. Rather than looking at all of her films, we can focus in on her new one, Faces Places, directed in collaboration with JR. We've got no interview this week. We're just going to delve right into this one. And so, guys, I wanted to, well, Rowan, we've heard a bit before about your relationship with Agnes's films. Alistair, where did you come in to the world of Agnes Varda?
So this actually was my second Varda I ever saw. The first one was One Sings, the Other Doesn't. And I saw them back to back, which was kind of weird. And Varda and JR were there when I saw it. And I was kind of unaware of her presence and his presence as an artist. So approaching it, I had like the blinkers on. I wasn't a keen Varda aficionado. But then this really turned it for me, kind of similar to what has been discussed over the course of Gleaning Truths and also this season at the BFI with the mummification of Varda. This really, like, I was like, oh my God, she's an absolute delight. So it kind of, yeah, served as a weird back to front way of getting into all the films.
It's an odd gateway to go for the musical that people kind of forgot about, and then the latest one.
I just stumbled upon it. That's how it happened. But it really gave me a broad spectrum and sense of what Varda is and what her creative palette is.
Rowan, you showed us in the Gleaning Truths episode how much you're aware of Varda's work, and it's nice that after premiering at Cannes last year and you sadly missed it, that now we're able to catch up and watch this one finally for you and audiences as well.
Yeah, I mean, I actually only saw this yesterday, and it's something I've been trying to catch for the last, what, sort of 15 months or so. And it really is as wonderful as everyone says.
So let's dig into what's Faces Places about. Well, as I said, it's this collaboration between Agnes Varda and JR, who is perhaps more well-known before this film as a photographer. And they share a lifelong passion for images and how they're created, displayed and shared. And Varda expresses this through cinema and documentary, JR through his emotionally arresting open-air photo gallery installations. And so when the pair first met, they instantly recognised the opportunity for a unique collaboration and set about exploring the villages and small towns of rural France, meeting different groups of people. They were inspired to create large-scale portraits plastered across unconventional locations. Now, a few months ago on our Let the Sun Shine In conversation, the Claire Denis film, we spoke about the translation of the title, and over here this film is called Faces Places, and in France and other countries around the world it's Visages Villages. I wonder for you two how you might interpret the difference between those and how each one might represent the film in its own way.
I'm always caught out when the distributors decide to alter it a little bit, but in this case, I think it fits quite aptly with JR's portfolio as an artist, but then also just the way Varda has always been focused on communities, even if it is through the Vice of Cleo or the character in Vagabond. I think it, strangely enough, is it's not like Let the Sunshine In or there was a Mia Hansen love film, similar to like Things to Come or Goodbye First Love. I can't remember the name in French, but it's like the complete opposite of what it should be and mislead you down this alleyway. But Faces Places is, yeah, an apt title and a cute one, I think.
Although I think it the English title does lose some of the specificity of the French title. I think it's not just places; it really is villages. It's those places that are in the margins of society, and those people who don't get their portraits taken, who don't get their portraits blown up on kind of giant billboards. So I think that sort of that geographical specificity is important and is slightly lost in translation, but. Mm. It nicely rhymes, doesn't it?
Yeah.
And that's what counts.
That's the main thing. So that's really what this film is. It's Agnes and JR driving around villages in France, and they're taking large format photographs of the villages and pasting them on the sides of walls and barns, wherever they can. And that's really it. It's this lovely road trip through the countryside of France. But let's go to the start of the film. I wanted to talk about the opening titles, which are these 2D illustrated drawn animation of the two of them in their van, and the titles and of the credits are all in a type that suggests a hand-drawn type way, and you look at them and they're a bit caricature-y. And you mentioned it already, Alistair, the memification of Varda that's happened maybe in the last 12 months. And I when the film started and I saw this illustration that I found, it's a little twee, it's a little cutesy, that I was worried that the film might play a bit too far into that.
I was caught off guard with it because I was like, is the film actually starting? I thought it was like a short before Anderson played it, because I was expecting this straight down the wire, like look into the villages in France, and all of a sudden this beautiful little 2D animation pops up. But then also the score by Mathieu Chédid, I think it is beautiful as well, and plucks along and really adds to this sense. But then it just, the moment it goes from 2D to real life, it's an exact replication of the images of I think it's Jaron and Varda walking together, and just cuts to real life. So it kind of works as this like tender little moment, but then over the course of the narrative you kind of caught off guard for what he eventually says about Varda. And I think that links into the way she... It's like linked into the mummification, because she's always focused on mortality and like the decaying body. So I think even though it starts off nice and pleasant, it kind of... The overarching narrative links into everything of Varda.
I think it nicely sets up a kind of playfulness that's often at work in her films. But I think, as you say, with the memification, I think the danger is with that we just see this sort of cuddly old grandma.
Yes.
And it sort of, it undercuts the sort of, actually the kind of the biting intellect and the kind of quiet... The kind of quiet politics that are at play in her work. And I think there's a danger that she is then just slightly kind of written off as this sort of, you know, cuddly old. And I mean, there's something quite, like, dare I say it, patronising about it. But I found the opening credits incredibly charming. Mm. And it set up this sort of kind of cute odd couple relationship between them, which I found is one of the, you know, there's so many pleasures in this film, but that relationship between them, between this kind of young sort of hipster street artist with a slightly kind of affected, you know, he has this sort of pork pie hat that he wears the whole way through and won't take off, and these dark glasses that he won't take off, and this, you know, cuddly octogenarian, and the way they sort of kind of banter and tease each other all the way through, I found absolutely charming. I thought, you know, a kind of reality TV producer couldn't have cast those roles sort of better in terms of it's
not like he is the Dev Patel character in a Marigold Hotel who's just put up against the old people to show that contrast. They seem like legitimate friends and they do have a natural chemistry.
Yeah, and a real sort of meeting of artistic minds. And it's remarkable, actually, that they set off with very little purpose. Yeah. You know, they go on this this journey with no real map, you know, both in terms of literally where they're going sort of geographically, but also in terms of, you know, script or the creative shape of the project. They just head off to collect images.
Yeah.
And it's remarkable that they're so sort of simpatico that sort of vagueness works and results in something so simple and yet so sort of profound.
Yeah, there's a freewheeling nature not only to the narrative but also to the filmmaking as a whole. It seems like they will go and do a bit of filming, back to the drawing board. What did we get? Where can we go from here? And the first, it's not really a scene, but maybe subject of the film is a mining town or mining village that has left, or most of its population has now left. And I think there's a lot of staging going on in the film. I don't think it really hides that construction, but you have JR and Agnes at the start sitting at a coffee table talking about, well, what should we film today? I've got an idea. And then we go to the village. And we shoot the people, and there's an amazing woman who's remained in this town, and they photograph her and they cover her whole house in her image. And it's a really arresting moment when she sees that for the first time and starts welling up, and that certainly got to me. And then we're back in the cafe, and then we're back to, well, it's a bit like Auntie Mabel in a way or something.
Yeah, it's very sort of loose and organic in a way that reminds me very much of the other kind of latter day documentaries, you know, The Gleaners and I or The Beaches of Agnes. And I love that sort of looseness and the kind of the spontaneity. It gives it a real sort of sprightliness. And energy, actually, which is, you know, it's hard to remember that this is made by someone, you know, in their very late 80s.
Yeah, it's so peculiar as well how all these, even though there hasn't been a plan for the script or the shooting method, it somehow all interconnects in the end. Like, because all of them kind of face this impending, I wouldn't say doom, but even in terms of the truck lorry drivers, like they're kind of constrained by the way society views them. But then even when you go to something like the houses and they're trying to re-establish life into them, there's this like overarching narrative that really catches you off guard because you just kind of, yeah, you're going along with JR and Varda on this like fun little trip. But then it's really saying, again, as you said before, the quiet politics of it all come to the boil.
Yeah, I mean, as you say, with the mining town or the truck drivers or the dock workers, the focus really is on the French working class. You know, actually, as again, the sort of the parallels with The Gleaners and I are quite striking. But this real sort of focus on allowing people to document their own lives, and you know, but both JR and Agnes Varda are kind of portraitists in one form or another, and sort of painting these portraits, both in terms of literal portraits where they're plastering these images up on walls and water tanks, but also kind of filmic portraits of communities.
And I think it's not just the workers that the film is about. It definitely, it becomes self-reflexive of Varda and JR, and they use it as a way of giving themselves their own self-portrait. And throughout we do find this interplay between Varda's own films, not just maybe inspired by or obviously having the feeling of, like, they do directly cut to them. And so, Rowan, you've already mentioned the later documentaries. Ali, want to go back a bit further. There's a cutaway earlier in the film when JR mentions a similarity of a portrait moment that's like Cleo from 5 to 7. I'm wondering whether there was any in the earlier work that you were thinking of during this.
Yeah, a little bit.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
I can't remember what year Cleo was, but there is a documentary she did in 76 when she was pregnant. And it was on her street, Rue de Guerre in Paris, called De Guerre au Type. And it's just a small little, it's even shorter than Faces Places, which is crazy to think how much emotion she gets into these short features. And it just focuses upon the butcher shop, the little corner shop, and it just goes down this little street in Paris and really interlinks it with this magic trick that happens in the little, in the little communal centre, and the way she links the profundity of life to the simplicity of it really links in beautifully, I think, to Faces Places, mm-hmm. and how all these little communities across France seem so out of touch from one another, but then JR and Varda come in and kind of link them and show them how the line in the film, they say, "Art is supposed to be surprising." Mm. That catches everyone in these communities off guard, and kind of, yeah, Varda's almost a magician in this film in comparison to Degas or Deep, I think.
Yeah, that's one of my favourite lines from this film. You've read my notes.
Yeah, I've read your notes.
So there is a one of the sections in the film is when they go to a factory. And they photograph the factory workers, the night shift and the day shift. And it's a brilliant exercise in photography. It seems like a school portrait, just being a bit silly, JR gets the group together, gets the day shift to kind of sway their arms one way, and it just looks like a bit of a say cheese moment, and then gets the other shift to do it the other way. And then once they're pasted on the wall, this idea of them reaching together and a community bonding who never really share any time suddenly feel together, it's really wonderful. And they get the factory workers to come and stand next to their portrait, and they ask one of them how they feel about this photograph, and really unassuming factory worker who is almost in a rush to get out of the shot. Seems like he doesn't care at all when he's going to say something flippant. He just says, "Art is meant to surprise us. Have a nice day." And then walks off down the tunnel. To me, that line felt like this film, that it manages to show as much profundity as you might want from it, but then undercut it and make it digestible as well.
I also love the moment where she posts a portrait that she took of her friend Guy Bourdin, the photographer, years previously, and they paste it on a bunker that's a concrete bunker that's fallen down onto a deserted beach. And it's this beautiful photo, and they go back the next day and the seawater has washed it away. And I just thought the way that she sort of thinks about memory and the ephemerality of memory, but both in terms of that picture, but also in terms of her reflecting on her life and her friendships and her previous work. I found that particular moment so, so moving.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that combined in the later sequences with the really up-close images of Varda's eyes when she goes to the hospital. I was just brought straight back to Jacques Danon and the way she captures the decaying body, and then also just the image of Varda, just someone holding grains of sand in the hand and it slipping through, just such a touching image, I think, in her collective approach as an artist to cinema. It's just always, yeah, just any time Varda goes near a beach, I'm caught off guard. Yeah. And almost welling up. I'm it really hits me.
Yeah, that makes me think of the way that the way that the film treats imagery in a way, that it's always on this boundary of complete disposability, but also kind of infinite life as well. And that there's this lovely bit where JR photographs Agnes's toes and eyes and then pastes them on trains to go on a tour around the country, and she might not ever see them again, but it's like her eyes will see everywhere. and then but they will get washed away, like the one on the sea that didn't last a night. But throughout the film there is also a not necessarily a celebration but just observations on how our own self-imaging has changed, and that there are these lots of selfies that people are shown to take of themselves next to their ginormous portraits. And it's not done in a Black Mirror kind of cinebro way of, oh, this is killing photography and only pure cinephiles will understand. It's actually really into it, and it's quite happy to celebrate that. And I think that shows a lot about Varda's approach to filmmaking. And we touched on this in the Gleaning Truths one, that she's always embraced that new technology, and whatever's around at the time, that's what she'll shoot on. And even in this film, we see that progression, that it, whatever, however you want to photograph something and however long you want that image to last, go and do it.
Yeah, it's a real sort of curiosity and sort of generosity of spirit that seems to run through her work.
Yeah, I lost track of how many I counted, but there's an awful lot of drone shots in this. But the good drone shots, you know, where you see like a, I don't know, Natural Geographic documentary, it's like, oh, a drone shot. Like here it's deployed in such a similar way. So the way, obviously it's not because there's not a tracking shot or anything like that, but it kind of pans across in the nature. It's done previously with Cleo and her other films, the way it follows a subject and moves from left to right. I was kind of, yeah, they add such a depth to the villages and the communities where they go, the drone shots, which isn't something that has been like projected forward in terms of people talking about drone filmmaking.
Oh, no. Everyone's like, kind well, of disregarding them. 4 or 5 years, I'm sick of them.
Yeah.
They get so overdone, and you're exactly right on these. Yeah. Wondering what other thoughts this film conjured up for you guys.
It was similar to the stuff about Degas Deep, just how the talking, it's just this like, they juxtapose the farmers with the goats, and how one section, well, one like rural farmer doesn't cut the horns off the goats, but another one does to kind of maintain the nature. And just the way that eventually this plays out in terms of talking about human nature and how we shouldn't repress like our desire to go out into the world and be who we want to be, kind of really caught me off guard in terms of, I was just sitting there, I was like, wow, this is just talking about goats, but somehow it's speaking to a greater meaning of life. And then watching it a second time, I was almost welling up the moment Jay, I went to visit a grandma, because I've got quite a personal relationship with grandma, she raised me, and I was just really, it kind of skipped by me the first time I watched it, and then when I watched it a second time, I was just in bits, because it was like an older woman than Varda, and Varda's like the oldest woman you'll see in terms of documenting, and then it was this older woman, and it was just, it really hit me. It really, really hit me, so yeah.
We should probably also mention Jean-Luc Godard, whose presence sort of hangs over the film, even though he's sort of entirely off screen or glimpsed in little moments from Varda's previous work. But her friendship, and initially she says at the beginning that JR, because he won't take his glasses off, reminds her of Godard. And then there's a lovely moment where they recreate that famous scene from Band Apart where they run through the Louvre, and JR pushes Agnès Varda in a wheelchair through the Louvre, and then he sort of Godard resurfaces at the end in a way that I won't spoil, but they go to visit Godard at the end, and that sort of linking Varda to a wider filmmaking community and a sort of particular moment in cinema history. But both sort of as a filmmaker, but also in terms of sort of her personal relationships, I found really affecting.
Yes, and I think the glasses at the start and throughout, Varda is mentioning how she's going to one day get JR to take his glasses off, and this is the only thing that's, I think, in the film is just a setup, and is that you know, you can feel like you know how that's going to pay off in a way.
But it does pay off,
yeah,
doesn't it? It does
pay off. It's really well handled. And I thought throughout that this, oh, that's a bit of a cheap device. But how it eventually comes together, I thought made it really work.
Absolutely.
Okay, I'm sure we could gather so many other people into this room just to talk even more about Faces Places. I mean, it does feel in a way like the last 15 months people have just been gearing up for this, and there are so many people that could talk about it and celebrate it, and it's because it's really wonderful. And it's going to be out in cinemas and available on demand this week, so if you can't make it to one of the cinemas showing it, you can just watch it on Curzon Home Cinema. But I would encourage you to seek it out in the cinema if you can. You were lucky enough to be part of a whole festival celebration
particularly obviously the images, but the score as well, because that just really plucks along in the cinema. And yeah, I mean, why don't you want to go and see a film in the cinema regardless of its, if it's searching or something that's supposed to be watched on a laptop or not?
But if you go and watch Agnes Varda at the cinema and then you fancy something on demand, you can watch Lucky as well. That's on Curzon Home Cinema now, directed by John Carroll Lynch and starring Harry Dean Stanton in his final role. It was the focus of our podcast last week, and it's really a treat. I really loved it. So go and check that out if you want to. And if you've got any thoughts on Faces Places or Lucky or any of the other recent releases that we've covered on the show, we'd love to hear your thoughts. You can email podcast@curzon.com, and that's we'll get those out for next week's show. If you want to and you enjoyed the show, you can subscribe. You can do that on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. And wherever you do get those, leave us a review, comment, give us a star rating, however you want to rate us. Next week we'll be talking to Bjorn Runge about his film The Wife, which might perhaps earn Glenn Close an Oscar. But that's really about it from us. You can follow Rowan at Rowan Woods.
At Rowan Woods, yes.
Yeah.
Rowan Woods.
And if you want to keep up with any of your screenings, we haven't even talked about that.
No, we haven't. Although my programming partner is about to have a baby, which rather takes him out of action for a while. But you can catch up when we do our next screenings at MISC Films. So that's at MISC_Films on Twitter.
Yes, make sure you check those out. And you can get more from Alistair at...
Just at Alistair Bayman.
Yes. And we might get some dispatches from New York Film Festival
as
well.
Yeah, who knows? Could come through the grapevine. We'll have to wait and see.
Brilliant. And you can follow me at Jake H. Cunningham if you really want to. And I think that's about it. So it's... we'll go around again. It's goodbye from Rowan.
Bye. Thanks for having me.
Goodbye from Ali.
Goodbye.
Goodbye from me. Goodbye.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.